What makes a community vibrant? Welcoming public spaces in every neighborhood. Clean air and water for all our residents. Good jobs and strong local businesses. What do all these have in common? Trees. If you support a healthy community and a thriving economy, you are an urban forest advocate. A message from the Sustainable Urban Forest Coalition, the U.S. Forest Service, and WRCT Pittsburgh. Okay, dads, it's time to dance. Now, we don't care if you cabbage patch, do the running man, break out a little jitterbug, or something a little more contemporary, the floss. In fact, we don't even care if you're not very good. You see, all we care about is that you take a moment to dance with your kids, because dancing with your kids is a great way to bond with them. Go to fatherhood.gov to learn more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Welcome to the David Pakman Show. I'm Farron Cousins, once again sitting in for David Pakman. We've got a wonderful show coming up today. Got to talk a little bit about the January 6th committee, more news on Joe Manchin, and of course, Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly's history tour, where Trump got in a bit of trouble with his audience for admitting he had been vaccinated. So let's jump right in. Let's start, actually, with Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly. During their history tour that was in Texas this past weekend, Bill O'Reilly talked to Donald Trump about the vaccines, and Trump encouraged the crowd, take credit for it. Don't miss this opportunity. But it was when Bill O'Reilly admitted he had been vaccinated, and then Trump admitted he had been vaccinated and boosted, that the crowd turned against them. Here it is. Take a look at this entire clip of what happened.
But look. We did something that was historic. We saved tens of millions of lives worldwide. We, together, all of us, not me, we got a vaccine done, three vaccines done, and tremendous therapeutics like Regeneron and other things that have saved a lot of lives. We got a vaccine done in less than 9 months that was supposed to take from 5 to 12 years. Because of that vaccine, millions and millions of people. I think this would have been the Spanish flu of 1917, where up to 100 million people died. This was going to ravage the country far beyond what it is right now. Take credit for it. It's a great, what we've done is historic. Don't let them take it away. Don't take it away from ourselves. You're playing right into their hands when you sort of like, oh, the vaccine. If you don't want to take it, you shouldn't be forced to take it. No mandates, but take credit, because we saved tens of millions of lives. Take credit. Don't let them take that away from you.
Okay, so the president made news.
Do you agree with that?
Right? Both the president and I are vaxxed, and did you get the booster?
Yes.
I got it, too. Okay, so...
That's all. There's a very tiny group over there.
All right, so they've both gotten their booster shots. And the audience wasn't too thrilled with that. But as Trump said, don't worry, it's just a small group of people over here. All right, here's the thing. Most of what Trump said there, I'm okay with, right? Actually encouraging people, like, you should get the vaccine. And then, of course, he undoes it by saying, but if you don't want to get it, you shouldn't be forced to. No mandates. Okay, see, you kind of lost it there, but I understand you got to play to your base. But think about this, and I've actually mentioned this all throughout this year, when vaccines became readily available, you didn't have to get on waiting lists, yet there's still so much hesitancy within the Republican Party itself. Trump could have been doing this months ago with these exact same talking points, right? Coming out and saying, listen, trust it, I have mine. This was developed while I was president, and you guys love me, right? So if you love me, get yourself vaccinated. And then, of course, he could have done the same thing once boosters became recommended, but he didn't. In fact, you could tell from that clip right there, he wasn't even sure that he wanted to admit that he got the booster shot, because he was just like, yes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he immediately had to go on the defensive, like, no, don't do that. Don't do the small group of people over here. If you had owned this from the beginning, again, I don't even care if you took credit for things that weren't even yours. If it meant people getting vaccinated, getting the country maybe back to normal, stopping the death and destruction the virus is causing, I would have been okay with that. There's a lot of lies, obviously, that Trump has told over the years that I'm really not happy about, that I dislike, and I've spent hours refuting them on my shows, even on this show here. But taking credit for the vaccine, sure, whatever. Whatever it takes at this point to get conservatives vaccinated, to get them boosted, and of course the remainder of the Democrats and everybody else out there, we're all in this together, okay? We have to come together here. And believe it or not, for most of what Trump was saying there, it almost appears that that's what he was trying to do. Now, we know he wasn't pulling one of those, everybody's got to come together and defeat this moment. He was trying to take credit for what's happening today. He's trying to take credit for the fact that people are getting vaccinated. Does he deserve credit for that? No, probably not. But again, I'm okay if he tries to usurp some of the credit if it means getting more people vaccinated. Right now, in Trump counties, counties in the country that voted for Donald Trump, which I'm sure we all know by now, the death rate is 3 times higher from COVID than the counties that voted for Joe Biden. Conservatives are dropping dead from COVID at a far greater rate than liberals are. That's what that means. That's what the science is telling us. And for these Republicans out there to take the opposite approach, which we're actually going to talk about that in just a moment, but Trump understands, I think, maybe to a degree, that you can't kill your base. I think Bill O'Reilly, to a degree again, understands that. I think some of the people at Fox News understand that. You can't continue to let these people die and still expect your conservative outlet or your conservative cause or your conservative campaign to be successful. You know, here in the state of Florida, and I always like to use this as an example, elections, at least at the state level, the last presidential election was not as close, they're very close, typically decided within a few thousand or a couple 10,000 votes. Well, we've had 62,000 people die of COVID here in the state of Florida. And again, the numbers are going back up all over the country. They're rising almost faster than anywhere else in the country here in the state of Florida. And again, it is affecting Republicans more than it is affecting Democrats because, according to the numbers, they're far less likely to have been vaccinated and boosted than the Democrats. So you're killing your base in a state down here in Florida that could be decided, the next governor's race in 2022 could be decided by 10,000, 20,000 votes. Well, you've sent that many conservatives, more than that, to their graves. So how are these people not waking up and understanding that this isn't a winning electoral strategy? You know, Forget the economic impacts. Forget the human, right? The empathy aspect of it all. Think of it from a purely political standpoint. What do you have to gain from your base dying before the next election? We all know the answer to that. We know that you have nothing to gain. You're not going to win political favor from people who are dead. And again, I think at least to a small degree, Trump understood that. And of course, he wants all the credit. He wants the pandemic to end just as much as everybody else, but he wants it to end so that he can say, my administration is really the one that ended it. We put the vaccines on the fast track. We got this done. We gave the money to Big Pharma. They did this in 9 months instead of 5 to 10 years, which, yes, is the typical timetable for getting a vaccine ready and approved and out there to the public. He's right about that, believe it or not. But it is a selfish reason. But at this point, we may have to accept a little bit of selfishness from these individuals if it means they get vaccinated, right? We can do the fact-checking later. We can correct the misinformation about who did what with the vaccines at a later date. Once everybody is protected, once we finally, for real, for good, flatten the curve, then we can have those discussions. In the meantime, if what it takes is letting Trump go out there and try to take credit for the vaccine in order to get conservatives to take it, I am okay with that. And I think a lot of people also should be okay with this. It doesn't matter which party is or isn't getting the vaccine. When you still have such a large part of the population that hasn't even gotten a single dose yet, that's a problem. It's going to allow for more mutations, more infections, more overcrowded hospitals, and more deaths. So at this point, we are in what I consider to be a whatever it takes scenario. So if it means Trump hogging some credit for the next few months in order to get these conservatives vaccinated, believe it or not, I'm okay with that. But as I mentioned, there's the opposite side of the spectrum that appears to be far too prevalent within the Republican Party. And those, of course, are the individuals who say, don't get vaccinated, don't trust the vaccines. There's more of us than there are of them. And of course, those are the talking points that came out of Sarah Palin at the Turning Point USA conference this past weekend. In fact, Palin went as far as to say that she'll get the vaccine over her dead body, which you may have wanted to choose your words a little more carefully there, because we've seen what this virus does. 800,000 Americans dead, saying over my dead body, probably not the best choice of words there. So let me read you what Palin had to say during her little Q&A at the TPUSA conference. We were led to believe that we wouldn't have to have the shot. Well, then they changed their tune, and now those of us who have had COVID, they're telling us that even though we've had it and we have natural immunity now, that we still have to get a shot. It will be over my dead body that I'll have to get a shot. I will not do it. Again, probably not a good choice of words there. And of course, before I go into what else she said, natural immunity does not provide you the same level of protection as the vaccines. The studies have already shown that. Yes, natural immunity can provide you some protection from it, absolutely. But it doesn't give you as much protection as the vaccines. So let's dispel with that talking point right off the bat. But let's continue, because this is where things get weird. This is where she differs from Trump. You know, Trump said, oh, you should get it, but if you don't want to, you don't have to. Palin actively encouraged people to straight up not take it at all. Here's what she says. There are more of us than there are of them. You need to all look around and realize as you stiffen your spine and take those positions, and we know our rights, especially when it comes to the government telling us what we have to inject in our own bodies, realize that those around you, as you stiffen your spine, their spines will stiffen too. Is spine stiffening a symptom of COVID? Because if it is, then I think she's spot on there. But what she's there's more of us than there are of you. First of all, no, there's not. There's actually more vaccinated people in this country than there are unvaccinated people. So right off the bat, you're wrong if that is in fact what you're talking about. Again, this is Sarah Palin, though, so we really don't know exactly what she's trying to say or what she might mean, because that's how Sarah Palin operates. But if you're like me, the biggest shock out of what Sarah Palin said here was the fact that she was even at the Turning Point USA conference to begin with, right? At what point did Sarah Palin become relevant again? Don't they have enough right-wing nut jobs out there to fill that role now that they don't have to go tap the well from the person who hasn't been relevant since 2008? That's a little weird to me, right? Nobody even thinks about Sarah Palin anymore. Kind of like Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter reemerges twice a year with a horrible talking point and then just disappears for like 6 months. Sarah Palin's been irrelevant since 08, though. So I don't know why Turning Point said, you know who would be a good speaker here? Sarah Palin. Maybe somebody got fired for that decision. I don't know. But I got to tell you, it's a little bit weird because she's not exactly a newsmaker these days and certainly not a major player at all in Republican politics and probably won't continue to be one if she's encouraging her base to do things that could get them killed. I'm Farron Cousins. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Farron Balanced. We'll be right back with more of The David Pakman Show. Welcome back to The David Pakman Show. I'm Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire. I'll be sitting in for David all of this week. And if by chance you want more from me, you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/FarronBalanced. And of course, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. One of the biggest stories that is still happening this week is more and more new information continues to trickle out every couple of hours, honestly, at this point, is Joe Manchin, the biggest, baddest bad guy in the country today, Joe Manchin. And on Monday, the Huffington Post reported that Joe Manchin has allegedly, according to two insiders that Huffington Post spoke to, Manchin has been telling his Democratic colleagues that one of the main reasons he is objecting to extending the child tax credit that has lifted 30% of children in this country out of poverty is because if you give poor people money, they're just going to spend it on drugs. Now, there's no audio, at least not that I've seen or has been reported on, of Joe Manchin saying these things. So let's, you know, mention that right off the bat. This is coming from two insiders who spoke to the Huffington Post. They said, this is what Manchin has been telling people behind the scenes. This is his talking point. If you give poor people money, they're going to spend it on drugs. So we have to assume at the moment, or at least for the sake of this segment here, we're going to assume what they're saying is accurate. Again, without a recording of this, without it written down, Joe Manchin writing it himself, we can't say for certain that Joe Manchin did say this. So let's imagine that he did, okay? Let's imagine for a moment that Joe Manchin used this tired, worn-out Republican talking point to trash the extended child tax credit, which, again, has lifted 30% of children in this country out of poverty. 30%! This child tax credit that's been going out for most of this year has fundamentally changed the lives of millions of Americans, but it has become one of Joe Manchin's biggest targets in the Build Back Better bill. And is it really because he honestly thinks that poor people, if they get cash in hand, they're just going to buy drugs? Is that really what he believes? Does he honestly think that every poor person in this country, everybody living in poverty, is just on drugs? Is that what he thinks the cause of poverty and suffering is here in the United States? It's only because of drugs? If somebody is living in poverty, that in no way makes them more likely to do drugs here in the United States. Poverty is not a manifestation that comes from addiction. And it's absolutely embarrassing and irresponsible for anyone, left or right, to make that claim. And if this is in fact how Joe Manchin feels, if he did really say this to his Democratic colleagues, which I would love if any one of them would come forward and say, yes, Manchin told me this, let's confirm it. So if this did happen, I believe at this point the Democratic Party would have no choice but to kick Joe Manchin out. And I believe that they should. I believe they should kick him off of his committees. I believe that they should refuse to give him any funding from the party. Not just based on this statement either, by the way. Based on the fact that he is obstructing the Democrats' own agenda. You know, Bernie Sanders pointed out last week in an interview with Chris Hayes on MSNBC that Manchin and Sinema were acting like Republicans. And when you look at what Republicans have done this year, nothing but obstruction. Obstruct, 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 especially in the Senate. But then when you look at Manchin and Sinema, obstruct, obstruct, obstruct. So it is as if they were acting like Republicans. Not as if, they are. That is what this is. Joe Manchin understands what Build Back Better could do to residents of West Virginia. They're not happy with him, by the way. The story's been pouring in ever since his appearance on Fox News on Sunday about West Virginia residents unhappy that Joe Manchin is standing in the way of this. But it all comes down, at the moment, to that child tax credit. You know, last week, Manchin was confronted by reporters asking, why do you oppose the child tax credit? He said it was BS, your BS. This isn't true. I never said that. I never did that. But I think it was October 21st is when the news reports came out saying that Joe Manchin wants to cut down the child tax credit, wants to put a cap on it. You know, if you make over $60,000 a year, you don't get anything at all. So he wanted to lower the cap. That was reported back then. He didn't call those reports BS. So he's lying. He's lying to us. He's lying to his constituents. He's lying to the country about what he actually is trying to do. And again, if this Huffington Post report is accurate, and again, we cannot say for certain that it happened, but if this report is accurate, then he is basing his rationale for killing the extended child tax credit on faulty and fraudulent information. And that is unacceptable considering how much this bill would benefit the American public. It's not going to lead to inflation. It's not going to lead to expanded drug use here in the United States. It would help continue to lift people out of poverty. It would help people be able to afford their bills. It would help people have a way, a stepping stone, to creating a better life. That is what this piece of legislation would do. Build Back Better. It's literally right there in the name, folks. But Joe Manchin doesn't think you should have it. Because Joe Manchin thinks you're going to go buy drugs. Absolutely sickening that this sitting Democratic member of the United States Senate would result to Republican talking points, going all the way back, by the way, to Ronald Reagan. Right, the welfare queens, the people living high on the government hog, while the rest of you hardworking folks are out there working your fingers to the bone, but they're getting the free government money, not having to do anything. That's what this is. This is a continuation of the fraudulent welfare queen trope pushed by Republicans in the 80s, and of course ever since then. Not to mention the fact, you know, just based on statistics, we know that means testing and, of course, drug testing, welfare recipients, government assistance recipients, yields very little results. In fact, from 2011 to 2017, you had multiple states across the country enact some kind of drug testing in order to receive social welfare programs. 1%, 1% of the applicants who were tested positive for drugs, 1% over a six-year period. So that alone kills Joe Manchin's talking point, helps kill that age-old Republican talking point too. But apparently that wasn't enough. It didn't stop Joe Manchin from allegedly telling his colleagues that if you give poor people more money, they're just going to go spend it on drugs. Now, as I mentioned, Joe Manchin, of course, is public enemy number one right now. But at the same time, we also have to remember that there's also 50 Republicans in that Senate body. And all 50 of those Republicans, including those moderates in quotes there, all 50 of them are against this piece of legislation too. So let's take just a moment and give them the credit that they are due. Because after all, let's be real honest here. The media, including those of us in progressive media, we have focused a lot of energy this year on Manchin, Sinema, Tester, but really, we also have to give some of that blame to all 50 Republicans in the Senate. Because not a single one of them, not Murkowski, not Collins, not Romney, not those sensible, reasonable, moderate Republicans, none of them support this thing either. And at this point, all it would take is one. Literally one. Because if we don't have Joe Manchin, assuming we do have Sinema and the other moderate Dems, if we got one Republican, okay, problem solved. Problem solved. But we can't even get one. And that also needs to be a bigger talking point, too. Because Manchin has many years before he is up for re-election, and I promise you by then, the public will have forgotten about this. That's the way the news cycle goes. As the old saying goes, the public doesn't have a memory past last Tuesday. Sinema, on the other hand, is facing a re-election fairly soon, and things are not looking good for her, according to the polls. But we have to make this a campaign issue for the Republicans as well. And that, of course, lies with the Democratic Party. Because everybody's been focusing on the Democrats there. They also have to reshift some of the blame and put it back on these Republicans. We're all well aware of Joe Manchin's role in all of this. And of course, by the way, Manchin and the White House have said, hey, talks aren't over yet. We're going to keep talking about this. So as I actually pointed out yesterday on the show, when Manchin said on Fox News, I can't support this bill, it likely means this incarnation of the bill. But all those Republicans are against it. It wouldn't matter if you cut it down to giving every American a single dollar. Every one of those Republicans would vote against it. Because they know that Build Back Better, even in its scaled down form, would still be a huge benefit to the American public and therefore a huge victory for Democrats to ride into the midterms. So we have to dispel with the myth that there are moderate Republicans out there. And that's what Democrats need to attack. We've heard all the stories about the Republican infighting. You know, oh, Trump's going after McConnell. You've got members of the House going after members of the Senate. There's fighting. They can't agree on anything. But no, at the end of the day, they always come together to do what's not best for the American public. And the Democrats have to hammer on that. Republicans have 20 Senate seats up for re-election in the year 2022. So less than 12 months away, 20 of those Republicans have to defend those seats. It's going to cost them a lot of money to do this. It's very difficult for a party to not only retain every single one of their seats when they have more seats up, but also to win new ones. So Democrats have a shot at making some inroads in the Senate here. Of course, it's going to be hard when they don't have the thing to deliver to the public. So what you deliver instead is the talking point that we would have this if you had one decent Republican in that Senate body. Because right now we don't. It doesn't matter if you're an extremist, if you're a hardcore corporatist like Mitch McConnell, or if you're the seemingly sweet, nice guy, moderate Mitt Romney. They're all the same at the end of the day. They're all fighting against this agenda for political reasons only. And if the Democrats can hammer on that, if the Democrats can make that the talking point, if they can kind of shift some focus away from Joe Manchin, who, again, I still agree, he is the biggest villain in all of this. If it weren't for him, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But we cannot let these 50 Republicans get away without any of the blame. Because all it would take is one. But we can't even get that to happen. I'm Farron Cousins. Follow me on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, at Farron Balanced. And of course, the big YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. And if that's not enough for you, I also host the weekly Ring of Fire podcast. Just go to ROFpodcast.com to sign up. I'm sitting in for David Pakman. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I'm Farron Cousins, sitting in for David Pakman this week. Let's get right back to more news. And what happened on Monday was it was revealed that Donald Trump is suing New York Attorney General Letitia James to get the investigation into his company shut down. Trump's lawyers, in their filing, argued, quote, the lawsuit was politically motivated, and the mission is guided solely by political animus and a desire to harass, intimidate, and retaliate against a private citizen who she views as a political opponent. She, of course, being New York Attorney General Letitia James. This is, without a doubt, in my non-lawyer expert opinion, one of the dumbest legal arguments I've honestly ever seen. This investigation has already resulted in criminal charges. Criminal charges against both the Trump Organization for tax crimes and CFO Alan Weisselberg. So how on earth are you going to go to court in front of a judge and say, judge, listen up. You know this investigation that is going to put our CFO in jail and causing us some legal headaches with the organization? Well, it's politically motivated. The judge is going to look at that and say, but there's criminal charges. Like it's bore fruit, right? We have actual results from this criminal investigation that show criminal wrongdoing. So how are you going to sit there and tell me that this is a witch hunt when we've found witches? You know, I mentioned this over on my channel, Fair and Balanced. Donald Trump might actually have a pretty good case for legal malpractice at this point. That's how bad this argument is. Now, here's the thing. If this investigation, which of course has been going on for about 2 years, if it was going on for 2 years and they couldn't find any evidence of criminal wrongdoing, you may have a very slim chance of being successful with this particular argument, right? You know, if you're looking at something for 2 years and still can't find anything at all, you've poured through the documents, you've had the depositions, and you have nothing, then that's a good sign, most likely, that there's nothing there. But there is a there. There's a there there. And the there is that there have been criminal charges on tax-related, I guess you would call them activities. So you can't say that this is purely a political motivated stunt when you got a guy that's probably going to jail for this. So the question comes down to timing, right? Why? At any point in the past 2 years, Donald Trump could have filed this ridiculous lawsuit and said, you're coming after me because I'm president, you're a Democrat, you hate me, and blah, blah, blah. He could have filed the lawsuit after the charges were filed against CFO Alan Weisselberg. And of course, the Trump Organization itself was also indicted. But he didn't. He waited till now. So now we get to put on our speculator glasses and try to figure out why. My best guess, and again, this is just my hypothesis, is that there's something big coming down the pipeline. Why wait till now? Probably because you know something. As we know, they've gotten a hold of Donald Trump's financial documents. We have seen that this investigation seems to span beyond the state of New York at the moment. You know, there's incidents in Chicago that are now also being reviewed. You've got some actually also happening up in Rochester, New York. all of it centering around the same thing. Did Trump and his organization lie about the value of their properties to both tax authorities and the banks? Was it tax fraud or was it bank fraud? Or maybe was it a little bit of both? That's what they're looking at up in Westchester. That's what they're looking at over in Chicago. And that's what they're looking at in New York. Bunch of different Trump-owned properties that are all being investigated for the same thing. And with what's happening in Westchester, for the record, they've got the proof. They've got his presidential filings where he showed the property was worth one thing, and they've got the local tax records where he claimed it's worth something far less than what he claimed on his financial disclosure forms. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe the walls are closing in a little too quickly for him. Maybe there's too many investigations going on, and he's doing what he can to file this ridiculous lawsuit to maybe stall it a little bit. Because at best, that's all he's going to do. This is not going to get this lawsuit thrown out of court. But it may slow it down a bit. It may allow for a little bit of appeal here and there. It's going to get tossed out of every court it goes in front of. That's a given. Again, because the argument is very stupid. But it may be just enough for Trump to delay it enough to maybe come up with a decent legal argument for when things finally go totally sideways. And speaking of investigations, what's happening over in the state of Texas? Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, on Trump's orders, has been investigating voter fraud in the state of Texas, right? Even though Trump handily won the state of Texas, he still wanted an audit of some of the areas that Joe Biden won, much like he's wanted here in the state of Florida. And I'll get more to that in just a moment. But in Texas, they finally caved and said, all right, we're going to investigate because you want us to investigate. And it was recently announced that Ken Paxton's office spent $2.2 million this year investigating voter fraud. 20,000 lawyer hours investigating voter fraud. And the state managed to close 3 cases in 2021. $2.2 million, 3 cases, 20,000 hours of work. That's what Texas was able to do this year. And it's actually quite remarkable because last year, Texas closed 17 cases related to voter fraud. So that would seem to indicate to me that since there were fewer this year, obviously the 2020 election in Texas was far more secure than their previous election, the midterm elections in 2018. 3 cases, that's it. You're talking about a little over $700,000 per case. Nearly 7,000 hours per case is what the state of Texas spent in terms of time and money to close these 3 cases. The fact of the matter is that voter fraud is not common in the United States. And it sure as heck has never been common enough to overthrow the results of an election, to overturn the election, to swing an election one way or the other. But Trump is still so just bent on trying to prove that even in the areas Biden won, in a state that Trump won by a lot, that somehow it still wasn't that much. Trump can't stand losing anything, any county, no matter how blue it is, he still wants it to be red. Because any person in this country voting for Joe Biden instead of Donald Trump is an affront to Donald Trump. And unfortunately, we have these Republican governors out there like Greg Abbott in Texas and, of course, Ron DeSantis over here in Florida, who are more than willing to spend whatever it takes to make a mockery of their entire state, even though they've both assured us that, hey, things are totally cool here. We didn't have any fraud. When Trump asks them to do something, they're dang sure going to do it. Even if it means spending 20,000 hours and $2.2 million to close 3 cases of possible voter fraud. And let's remember, that's closing 3 cases. That doesn't mean 3 people were found to have committed voter fraud. It means those 3 cases are over with. Either they found the evidence and they charged the individuals, or they couldn't find any evidence and they just ended it. This report doesn't say which was which. We do know there's at least one case that they did find, but the other two may have been completely wasted. All the money, thousands of hours of people's work, for absolutely nothing. But not to be outdone, folks, as I mentioned, Florida trying to give in to Trump's crazy demands too. And our Trump-loving governor, Ron DeSantis, over here in Florida, is asking the state legislature to give him $5.2 million so that he can create an Office of Election Crime and Security next year. Now, he is urging the state legislature to give him this new office when they resume their session next year. Obviously, it's not going to happen in 2021, unfortunately for him. But again, Trump has demanded that we do some audits here in Florida, only of the areas Biden won, the five counties Biden won in South Florida, the big ones. And Ron DeSantis says, sure, let me go talk to the legislature. I just got to get about $5 million. I got to hire roughly 50 people. So, you know, it's going to be good. It's going to be a job creating thing, right? We're going to have a new Florida agency, 49 permanent staffers, whose sole focus is going to be looking into voter fraud. Yeah, I imagine there's going to be some downtime at that office. So, hey, if you're in the state of Florida looking for a job where you don't really have to do much, maybe wait and see if this new office gets created, because that would be the job for you. Because the problem we have here is that actually there is voter fraud in Florida. We found three cases. Just last week it was revealed. All three of them from the retirement community called the Villages. And all three of them, Republicans. See, this is why Trump and DeSantis and Abbott over in Texas, this is why y'all got to be careful what you wish for. The vast majority of the voter fraud cases that have been found from the 2020 election have been Republicans voting twice. Obviously, some of the more notable cases, we have the man who voted for his deceased mother, used her ballot, voted for Trump. Man who voted for his deceased wife, used her ballot to vote for Trump. The three people down in the Villages that it was revealed last week, they voted here in the state of Florida. They also voted absentee from other states. It didn't say who they voted for, but they're all registered Republicans, so we don't have to really even use our imaginations to wonder how those votes went. And according to new reports, they think there's even more voter fraud that took place in the Villages, which is predominantly Republican. So Ron DeSantis, I'm going to tell you this, man. I am actually okay with you creating this division. I truly am. Because voter fraud does need to be addressed if it exists. And if you want to devote time and resources to it, then dang it, you better find some voter fraud here in the state of Florida. And according to the reports, according to an ongoing investigation, apparently the first place you need to go are those retirement communities where it is predominantly Republicans. Because that seems to be where the fraud is running rampant. Much like the other things that have been running rampant in the Villages. If you don't know what I'm getting at, I suggest you Google it. It is, at one point at least, one of the highest rates of STDs in the country, but when they're not doing that, apparently some of them are committing voter fraud as well. And that's what we're dealing with here in the state of Florida. But let's not pretend for a second that voter fraud is actually a real problem that we need to be devoting millions and millions and millions of dollars and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours towards fixing. Are there cases out there? Heck yeah, we found plenty this year. I mean, we found a couple handful of them. Let's be real. Most of them are Republican. So, if y'all want to root it out, if you want to put your own people in jail, fine by me. I'm not going to stop you. But if you want to pretend that our elections are somehow unsafe because of all the fraud, that's where I draw the line, because the evidence tells us otherwise. I'm Farron Cousins. You can get me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at FarronBalanced, YouTube.com/TheRingOfFire, ROFPodcast.com. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire, sitting in for David Pakman this week. And if you've enjoyed me, feel free, please subscribe to the Ring of Fire podcast. Go to ROFpodcast.com and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire or youtube.com/FarronBalanced. Let's get right back into the news. We've got a lot of Republican infighting and, of course, some more news from the January 6th Select Committee. So let's jump in. First and foremost, Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon is unhappy with Mitch McConnell because Donald Trump is unhappy with Mitch McConnell. As we all know, Donald Trump has been engaged in a months-long battle with Mitch McConnell that has kind of had some highs and some lows, and Trump trying out his new nickname for him, the old broken crow, the old crow, the broken old crow. A lot of different iterations. He hasn't quite settled on one yet, but either way, he's mad at Mitch McConnell. And of course, he is encouraging Republicans to oust him from his leadership position. So this past Friday, on his War Room show, Steve Bannon joined in and attacked Mitch McConnell for what he sees as a betrayal of Donald Trump. Here's what Bannon said. He is a direct challenge to President Trump, and Trump is trying to lead this country through these horrible times. Mitch McConnell, that dirtbag right there, gave the Biden regime $2.5 trillion to fund their madness. Their madness. These are horrible times, he says. And we're funding madness. Huh. You know what really gets me about that before I get into the heart of the argument here is what the hell are they talking about? Horrible times. Like, what exactly are conservatives so mad about right now other than losing the 2020 election? What about their lives has changed since Joe Biden came along? Right? We haven't had lockdowns. We have vaccines readily available. We're on the verge of approving an actual COVID treatment. So you can't complain about the COVID stuff. He hasn't changed your taxes, so you can't complain about that. So what exactly are conservatives angry about with the Biden administration? Honest to God, I want an answer to that. I want a real, legitimate answer from conservatives about what you're so mad about from this administration. And I think that is a question we should be asking of them on a regular basis. Why are you mad? What has he done that makes these horrible times? Conversation for another day, though, right, folks? Let's get back to what Steve Bannon said. He's betrayed Donald Trump, he said. And this is because, of course, they worked a deal out, McConnell and Chuck Schumer, to allow for the debt ceiling to be raised. That's the heart of all of this, at least Steve Bannon's gripe. So we got a higher debt ceiling, right? So the U.S. doesn't default on their debt. And according to Bannon, that's a betrayal of Trump. A betrayal of Trump. You know, the old retired guy who's sitting down there in Florida playing golf. He has been betrayed. He's not in power, Steve. So I don't know exactly what you're so mad about betraying Donald Trump, because the man doesn't have a job. He's retired. But again, Mitch McConnell, Donald Trump, and now, of course, Steve Bannon, been in this feud. Trump is trying to back Republicans for Senate. Two of them have pledged, if I get in the office, I'm going to kick McConnell out of his leadership position. Trump is encouraging other Republicans to do it. And so far, not a single sitting Republican has signed on to this idea of kicking Mitch McConnell out of his leadership position. Let me explain why. But to explain why, I got to read a little bit more about what Bannon said here. Here's what your legacy will be. People are going to throw up in their mouth. You have betrayed the Republican Party. You've betrayed the movement. You're only there because of Trump. You never had any loyalty. The man who's been representing the people of Kentucky in the United States Senate since I was 2 years old. So since the 1980s, the early 1980s. He's only there because of Trump, Steve? No. You've said a lot of dumb things in your life, and that might actually be one of the dumbest. Mitch McConnell doesn't owe any of his success, and let's be honest, it has been a success for him, to Donald Trump. Like, literally none of it. Mitch McConnell's legacy is not going to be people throwing up in their mouths unless, of course, they're on the left. Because his legacy is packing the courts with these corporatist judges. His legacy is tax cuts for the wealthy. His legacy is obstructing any kind of forward progress for the United States of America. None of which he owes to Donald Trump. He did it under Reagan. He did it under H.W. Bush. He did it under George W. Bush. It wouldn't matter who the Republican president was. Mitch McConnell was one of the guys calling the shots the entire time. And when he had Democratic presidents, Clinton, Obama, and now Biden, he's been leading the charge for obstruction, none of which, again, he owes to Donald Trump. So, Bannon, you're delusional if you think that Mitch McConnell owes anything to Donald Trump. If anything, it's the other way around. Mitch McConnell's good at politics, and I will give him credit for that. He is a horrible person, in my opinion, who has enacted some horrible policies and blocked some great ones. But when it comes to being a Republican who knows how to do things, Mitch McConnell, there's no one better than him. And that is literally the only praise I will ever give for Mitch McConnell. But Steve Bannon has more problems than just Mitch McConnell. Because Roger Stone, Steve Bannon's longtime ally turned foe, has now once again gone after Steve Bannon. This past week, Roger Stone attempted to throw Steve Bannon under the bus with regards to the January 6th insurrection by suggesting via his Telegram account that Steve Bannon may have been the one that caused the Capitol riot. Here's what he said. It is highly likely that Steve Bannon really gave the order to breach the Capitol and maneuvered patriots into dangerous positions. A neophyte, Steve Bannon was willing to try crazy things like this to curry favor with Trump, who had a no interest, that's how he wrote it, in Bannon's BS. So, more Republican infighting. Now, this is an interesting accusation from Roger Stone, who, of course, was thrown under the bus by Steve Bannon himself during Stone's criminal trial. Bannon testified against him. So, Stone has had some bad blood against Bannon ever since that happened. But, of course, Donald Trump gave him his presidential pardon. So these two weirdos, I guess, are fighting over who gets to be Donald Trump's right-hand man. Is it going to be Roger Stone? Or is it going to be Steve Bannon? Well, Roger Stone's not going to pull any punches here. He is actually trying to say that Steve Bannon is the one who incited the Capitol riot. Now, that's a strong accusation, right? Now, Roger, if you've got evidence to back this up, please do come forward with it. I know you, in your little text there, you suggested it. You didn't say you knew it happened. You just said this may be a thing. Dig a little deeper, bud. We're counting on you. If you can take down Steve Bannon, then by God, take down Steve Bannon. Do it. Don't just sit there with wild accusations, right? You can't get away with that. You can't make these suggestions and then just let that be it. No, man. If you've got something, well, put it this way. As the airports say, if you see something, say something. So I'm putting that on you, Roger Stone. If you've got any evidence at all to suggest that Steve Bannon may have been involved in planning the Capitol riot, in inciting the Capitol riot, in calling the people to storm the Capitol, please come forward, hand it over to that committee, and maybe for once in your life, you could be a hero, not just to the Republican dirty tricksters, but maybe to the American public as well. See, I'm just trying to appeal to your human side, if you have one. Heaven only knows if you do, but yeah. I'm all with you if you want to take down Bannon. Just putting it out there. And finally, speaking of the January 6th committee, Alex Jones has decided to sue the January 6th committee and, of course, AT&T to stop the release of his phone records to that committee. Now, his argument, a little interesting. Let's hear it here. It says, quote, in the lawsuit, a declaratory judgment that the subpoena to Alex Jones and the subpoena to AT&T serve no valid legislative purposes and exceed the select committee's and Congress's constitutional authority in violation of the separation of powers principle contained in the United States Constitution. Now, if you'd have stopped before you got to the separation of powers, you actually had what's not considered to be a terrible legal argument. The separation of powers has nothing to do with what you're talking about, though. So, you kind of overstepped there. But let's get to this, right? The constitutional basis for the House of Representatives, a committee in the House of Representatives to carry out these investigations. Believe it or not, is that included in the Constitution? No. No, it's not. That's something a lot of people do not know. But the Constitution does not say specifically, explicitly, that the House of Representatives gets to carry out these investigations. However, precedent tells us otherwise. Court cases, Supreme Court cases, tell us otherwise, because the Supreme Court, for several hundred years now, has interpreted the Constitution to basically say that the founders intended for Congress to have this power, because, you know, all other duties. That's actually what they cite. So the courts have told us Congress does have this authority, even if it's not always for a specific legislative purpose. And for the record, the history buffs out there, you may already know this. This goes back to 1795, when Congress conducted its first investigatory action, really. Happened all throughout the 18th century, the 19th century, the 20th century, and of course all the way to today, and court cases all along the way reaffirmed Congress's authority to actually do this. So if you were going by the strict letter of the law in the U.S. Constitution, this legal argument is actually not that absurd, which, you know, a little disappointing. But when you look at past court precedent, when you look at the precedent that Congress itself has set, the powers that they have won in these court cases, then they absolutely have the authority to do this, even if it's not for an explicitly legislative purpose. Now, that may be the only thing, because that's still considered a very legal or a very gray area in the legal world. That may do something to move the needle a little bit, but I seriously doubt it. Courts have already ruled, obviously, in this particular matter, not necessarily with Alex Jones, but in Trump trying to claim executive privilege from other committees also saying, you can't have my financial documents because it's not for a legislative purpose. Courts have said, we don't care. That doesn't matter. Doesn't have to be. Again, Constitution's iffy on this. It's going to depend on what kind of judge it goes up against. But of course, Alex Jones, if he was in communication with these individuals inside the White House on the day of the riot, obviously would be a person of interest, which would make it a valid subpoena if, of course, Congress does have the authority to even conduct these investigations, which is why, as I continuously say, the committee needs to turn their documents and everything they have over to a special prosecutor and let the DOJ take it from here. You avoid questions like this, you avoid some issues, everybody's a winner. We got some great content coming up for you in the bonus show. I'm Farron Cousins, been sitting in for David Pakman today. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Farron Balanced, ROFpodcast.com.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only flat beat. Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
This is DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
America's armed forces will continue to do everything in our power to avoid civilian casualties. With our extraordinary technology, we're conducting the most precise air campaign in history.
The New York Times has revealed the Pentagon's covered up deaths of thousands of innocent civilians killed in the U.S. air wars in the Middle East. The explosive report directly contradicts claims by U.S. presidents and military leaders who've praised the precision of the U.S. airstrikes. We'll speak to reporter Asmat Khan, who personally visited 60 bomb sites in Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan to document the human toll of the air war. Then we'll look at President Biden's plan to respond to a surge in COVID cases linked to the Omicron variant. From free at-home tests to deploying the military to help overwhelmed hospitals.
How concerned should you be about Omicron, which is now the dominant variant in this country and it happened so quickly? The answer is straightforward. If you're not fully vaccinated, you have good reason to be concerned.
We'll speak to an emergency room doctor. And a group of Haitian asylum seekers have filed a class action lawsuit against the Biden administration, accusing the government of physical abuse, racial discrimination, and other severe rights violations while they were forced to take shelter under a bridge in Del Rio, Texas. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden addressed the nation Tuesday amidst a fast-growing winter COVID surge, largely linked to the highly transmissible Omicron variant. He cautioned people against panicking, but said those who are unvaccinated have, quote, good reason to be concerned. Biden announced a plan to distribute half a billion free at-home tests starting in January and more aid for hospitals. He also addressed the issue of federal vaccine mandates.
I know vaccination requirements are unpopular for many. They're not even popular for those who are anxious to get them. My administration has put them in place not to control your life, but to save your life and the lives of others. Where 400,000 Americans died from COVID this calendar year, and almost all were unvaccinated. Almost all were preventable.
In Texas, an unvaccinated man in his 50s is believed to be the first recorded U.S. COVID death linked to the Omicron variant. It was his second COVID infection. Harris County urged residents to get vaccinated. California will require healthcare workers to get a booster shot. It's the second state to announce a health worker booster mandate after New Mexico. New York City is offering $100 to receive a booster shot at city-run vaccination sites before the new year in an effort to curb an explosion in infections. Meanwhile, Mayor-elect Eric Adams and other elected officials announced they're calling off an in-person inauguration gala due to the skyrocketing cases. In Philadelphia, the city's largest high school has switched to remote learning after 41 teachers called out of work Monday following the death last week of a 17-year-old student from COVID. California Congressmember Barbara Lee is the latest vaccinated and boosted lawmaker to test positive for COVID-19. She said she's experiencing cold-like symptoms and called on people to get their vaccine or booster. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz also announced he and his family tested positive for COVID-19. So did Maryland Governor Larry Hogan. The U.S. military has reportedly developed a vaccine that is highly effective against COVID, including all its variants. The vaccine, created over 2 years at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, is also said to be effective against other SARS origin viruses. A public announcement with more information about the vaccine is expected in the coming weeks.